Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and we're going to be talking today about something that every single person is affected by, and that is loss. Yes, Hannah Hanskeltner is going to be my guest today. We're going to be talking about a fascinating book. It's called The Business Guide to Legal Literacy. And I think that this is so important, especially for anyone who is in business, because of the perspectives that are given through this material. It really gives you something to think about. And I want to welcome Hannah to the show.
Well, thank you very much.
Hannah, you're a corporate lawyer, and you've been both in the private sector as well as government. And you were a former adjunct professor at the top-ranked Duke University Fuqua School of Business, where you taught legal leverage to executive MBA students. And currently, you're the Associate General Counsel and National Counsel for Trademark Enforcement at Lorillard Tobacco Company.
That's right.
Now, you really enjoy talking about preventive law. And you also are on an editorial board of the Journal of Business Ethics Education. I would like for you to give a little bit of a description of what you call preventive law. What is that?
Well, I compare it to preventive medicine. I mean, we're used to going to the doctor for annual checkups or to the dentist just to have a routine cleaning and so forth, and I think that concept is very transferable to the legal context, where people could take a look at where they are. Are we doing what we're supposed to? Do we need to have a little tune-up, an oil change, what have you? Because all too often we just run in business until all of a sudden something breaks down and stops, and then it's like, oh, what happened? And so preventive law, to the extent that you can call it that, would be to anticipate and also to do sort of periodic, audits is maybe a strong term, but just a review to see where you are and how you're doing.
Well, I think that's always a good idea. I know laws are always changing, and
yes,
laws are different in every state, in different countries. We have so many variables that we must deal with when we're in business, and even the person that may not be in business but maybe has a spouse in business or is in some way associated with various aspects, it's good to know these things because it gives you, what do you want to say, an ounce of prevention in many instances. I mean, I've known so many people that did not take that positioning, and it bit them badly.
Absolutely. And the thing is, when something terrible like that happens, I think we all have a tremendous sense of frustration. All of a sudden you've got a legal problem, and one of the first things that crosses your mind is, what's it going to cost me, and how am I going to make it go away? And that's one of the reasons I wrote The Business Guide to Legal Literacy, because I grew up in an entrepreneurial family. You know, over the dinner table we'd have these conversations about, you know, customers or projects and whatnot, and as I got into law school, I realized the legal dimension always somehow wove into these types of things. So what I wanted to do was sort of lay out a roadmap that people could pick and choose, like a smorgasbord, as to, you know, what might help them make their business run smoother.
You bring out some points in your book right at the very beginning that I know a number of listeners would just say amen to. You say, being an attorney, when you first started out, you started out in 1981.
Right.
You said you learned, and I'm quoting directly from your book, why many managers and executives held a dim view of lawyers, because you met a lot of lazy lawyers who found it easier to say no and kill a deal than work through the issues and find solutions that were both practical and legally sound. Hannah, the area of law over the years and in today's world, it just really is in what I'd call the low end of respect. It's a necessary evil in the minds of a lot of people, and that may sound rather harsh, but I was in a discussion not too long ago with someone where they were just dreading the interaction with an attorney because they felt like they were so ill-equipped to deal with the lingo. And that's something that your book, Legal Literacy, empowers a person to know how to understand the language of the law to a degree, and also to be able to communicate with an attorney.
Yes, I understand the frustration of people dreading conversations with their lawyers, and it's really unfortunate because I think there's a gap in our legal training that lawyers aren't trained in law school about what it looks like from the client's perspective. And as a result, they're in their own little world, they have their own jargon, and, you know, believe me, they're trying to help the client, but there's this communication gap, and that is something that my book is trying to bridge, because I think that the more business people understand what's happening and what's going on, the more confidence and the more comfort level they'll have in terms of having these discussions. They could also target the discussions more precisely and strategically, and that saves time and money, and it's good all around.
Well, and I think it would bring a level of credibility that would make someone feel like they've got something going for them, and they're not, people in general are not interested in the ambulance chasers. People in general do not like having to go to court because no matter where you are in business, any time that's going to take you away from your business is going to cost you money, number one.
Of course.
And number two, it's going to cause a loss in efficiency because of the stress. And there are going to be times when we have to have representation. So again, that's why I think your material, Legal Literacy, the Business Guide to Legal Literacy, is a valuable thing to have in one's library so that you can sit down and read through a portion at a time if you want. You don't have to go through the whole book all at once, but you can sort of digest it and even go into sections that have more interest to you than perhaps other sections. It is a sad statement, again, of our time. We've had corporate corruption that has been just at a phenomenal level. Just seems like historically we seem to go through these upswells and, you know, just mucky messes that occur because of a lack of ethics. But you really bring across something, and that is, and I'll quote again from your book, lawyers need to recognize that not all legal risks are created equal.
Right.
And stress that a little bit. Let's go into a little bit of that statement, because there are so many variables, and there's different ways of handling things. There's no black and white with this, is there?
No, there's no black and white, and it always disturbs me when some lawyers, especially the litigators, seem to have, you know, the sledgehammer in their toolkit, and that's the only tool that they have. You know, if that's the case, then everything gets smashed, and that's really unfortunate. You know, I don't think you have to go that route. And I think that it's really important that partners and firms are sensitive to the different needs of the client in terms of listening to what's really critical. You know, as I like to tell people, you know, there may be 10 issues in a particular matter, 10 legal issues, but they don't all have the same level of importance. And if you don't get past number one and two in terms of priority, the others aren't even going to matter. So it doesn't really pay to research every one of those issues into a 40-hour memo if, you know, the odds are that you're not even going to reach it. Sort of take it one step at a time, let it unfold, let it evolve, and counsel along the way so that you can get to a good result and a good resolution without the overkill. And unfortunately, too many lawyers take the view that, well, you know, you're not doing your job if you don't research every single issue to the nth degree. And that, of course, just, you know, raises the bills. But that's the equivalent of doctors ordering every single possible test.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're faced with a huge bill.
Right. That's where if you know how to evaluate an attorney's skills and background, which is always tough for the average individual, it's tough for a lot of us unless we've had some experience in the learning curve called life that you are able to recognize you need a certain type of an attorney for a certain kind of an environment, and that gets into an area of specialization. Let's talk about winning from the beginning. What is the positioning that someone should take if something seemingly is going to be evolving? How can we be proactive in dealing with situations? Give us some examples.
Well, I'd be glad to. I think winning from the beginning is definitely something that a business executive, manager, regardless of whether it's a big business or a small one, can take ownership of. And it starts with little things. You know, I really think that small incremental changes can have a huge difference in the overall course of a lifetime of a transaction. And let me give you one example, and this involved an account specialist. We're not talking about somebody very high up in the organization, but they process orders as they come into the company. And they routinely would sign contract acknowledgments. And they used to think of these in terms of, oh, this is like a receipt. We got your contract. You want to know that I got it. Okay, I'll sign. No problem. Well, one day I encouraged them to read that acknowledgment closely, and they were really shocked by what it said. Because it was a whole lot more than just thank you for receipt of your contract. What it said was, by signing this document, you are acknowledging that our terms and conditions of purchase will govern the transaction. Now, of course, the company had its own terms and conditions of sale. But by signing that acknowledgement, that account specialist was allowing those terms and conditions of purchase to trump the company's terms and conditions of sale. Now, that may not sound like a whole lot, but if you try to compare the two, you know, these are pre-printed standard type forms, so they make you feel like, well, this is standard. Everybody's is the same. But if you really compare them side by side, you'll discover that they're not the same. There could be differences in warranty, in terms of what you really are purchasing and what the company will stand behind or what they expect you to stand behind. There could be differences in terms of indemnity, with the bad thing were to happen, what they expect you to be reimbursed for. It could be even something as simple as shipping instructions. For example, if their terms were to specify that time was of the essence, that's a very specific phrase in the law that has a very unique meaning. When time is of the essence is in a contract, it means you cannot be a minute late, not even a nanosecond. If it says 12 noon, it's got to be there at 12 noon. And you see that type of provision typically in a real estate closing. I mean, if you're purchasing a house, you've got all your belongings in a moving truck, you want to have that closing because you want that truck to start being unloaded as soon as the ink is dry, as soon as you have those keys. So you can't have a reasonable interpretation, you know, give or take a couple days or a couple weeks, which is the usual standard for interpretation for a contract. So that simple acknowledgement had all kinds of legal implications that this account specialist wasn't aware of. So just simply reading the documents that are in front of you could go a long way to raising questions that you may not have had before, and also being able to spot potential problems, even something like payment terms. You know, maybe you want to be paid net 10 days or on receipt, and they're pushing you out to 45, 60, or 120 days. Now, that can wreak havoc on your cash flow and your working capital. So I'm sorry for the long answer here, but I think that's just like one tiny example of how just paying close attention to what's on your desk can go a very long way to avoiding some legal headaches and misunderstandings.
Let's talk about international law for a moment.
Sure.
In as much as business, well, it's been global for centuries.
Right.
But in the world today, there, again, is with every company, there's different rules, there's different regulations. I've known of businesses that have had dealings with Russia. They think everything's going to be just absolutely kosher, and then they ended up in a disastrous mess. You have things that can happen. Let's talk about international law and what can someone who is thinking of opening a business or wanting to do importing, exporting, you know, any kind of supply that's coming from another country, how do they become aware? And their book, Literacy, is a very good thing to have. But give us some insight on international law.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. Business is very global these days. And even if somebody isn't physically shipping things around the world, the Internet is the great equalizer. So there's always a concern about what happens in another jurisdiction. And I think one of the biggest mistakes we make here in the United States, because we are such a huge country with a vast geography, we can travel for hundreds and thousands of miles without leaving the United States.
True.
And so we tend to think that things are more homogeneous and transfer that when we do business dealings overseas. And that can be dangerous and misleading. Let me give you an example. I was working with someone once who wanted to open a sales office in Malaysia. And they had contacted somebody. They had the lease all squared away for the office space. They had a couple of really good candidates that they wanted to hire and wanted to get into an employment contract with them. And I said, well, you know, wait a minute. We really need to have some local counsel there because the employment laws in Malaysia may be very different. And sure enough, things like salaried employees had a totally different meaning. I mean, in that particular country, even salaried employees were entitled to overtime. So you can imagine that if you're budgeting for a new office and a new project, and you have certain dollars allocated for what you think your employment costs are going to be, and you're putting it on a U.S. concept of a fixed salary with maybe a bonus, but if you're expecting umpteen hours for that, and then all of a sudden you discover, yeah, you're getting the hours, but here's the bill for the overtime, that'll bust your budget.
Mm-hmm.
It's always a good idea to get the view from the ground level with a local counsel. And if you have a large corporation that has an in-house counsel or your own law firm that you use, it's always good to sort of coordinate the effort because the local counsel isn't going to know your business as well as your domestic counsel.
Talk about General Electric and Honeywell, the merger that they have done and how that really hit a brick wall when it went over to Europe. Talk to us about a little bit about that.
Oh, that was a number of years ago, and yeah, that was a good example of some very seasoned business people having the U.S. antitrust picture pretty much ironed out and wanting to move forward with the transaction and assuming that they would get the same type of antitrust clearance in the European Union. Unfortunately, there was a slightly different standard applied. So even though the facts were the same, you apply a different standard, and the result was different. And sure enough, unfortunately, they got a negative response from the competition folks over in Europe at a very critical juncture in the deal. It was late in the deal. So parties were pretty much wedded to the structure, and of course it was the structure that they objected to. And the deal wound up tanking, which was very unfortunate because it probably would have been one of the crown jewels in Jack Welch's storied tenure at General Electric before he left. So, you know, even the best of business people can sometimes be blindsided by a result. And it's all about anticipating and trying to look into that crystal ball as best you can. And certainly local counsel helps. I think they got local counsel involved a little late in the game, unfortunately.
Now, when you're saying local counsel, it's local counsel in that country.
Yes, definitely. In the country. Somebody who's done these types of transactions before, who's familiar with the terrain, who's familiar with the regulators and their perspective.
That also happened with Walmart in Germany, which I found extremely interesting. They have a special regulatory grouping of rules talking about how you have to be very alert to the competitive environment there. Tell us what happened with Walmart in Germany.
Well, yeah, exactly. Germany has a lot of regulations that they're very fond of and they enforce strictly, as far as their employment laws, as far as the hours that stores can be open, what days they can be open, and running afoul, you know, even if somebody's got a international policy that this is what they do around the world, you still have to be very sensitive to the local jurisdictions because different countries don't like to have their laws flaunted by anyone, regardless of how big they are. And it can really put a crimp in your business model.
It put a big one in Walmart's business.
Absolutely.
Model.
Yes,
really
indeed.
Big time, which makes for fascinating reading. Now, extraterritorial laws. What
Sorry?
Are those, the extraterritorial laws? What
yes,
are those?
Extraterritorial laws. I think a lot of people don't realize that when they go overseas, they don't necessarily leave the United States and the laws here in the good USA behind. Some of them will actually follow you. And antitrust is certainly one of them. And certain customs regulations and employment laws. Those are three that come to mind. If a U.S. employee is assigned abroad, they still have protection of the U.S. employment laws for things like sexual harassment, discrimination, and so forth. Even though those particular types of rules wouldn't be recognized in the host country that they are going to.
You have so many different countries that you bring out cases of the information regarding these cases. Really fascinating. Major companies, the various things that they have gone through that have really bitten them hard financially because they've often had to pay fines when they didn't pay attention or thought that they didn't have to worry about things. Boy, you really have to have legal representatives that have a real understanding of what's going on here. So many of the people that are listening maybe are interested in inventing or they have different things they want to do. Let's talk about intellectual rights, copyrights, and trademarks. Intellectual property, let's put it under that umbrella. Let's address that for a moment. How is that taken care of?
Well, intellectual property is a very, very hot topic. And everybody has intellectual property, whether they realize it or not. And it starts with as simple as trade secrets. And you might say, well, gosh, what are trade secrets? Well, it's anything you don't want someone else to know about your business, whether it's your capital structure, what you're paying your employees, the secret sauce in your famous recipe, Coca-Cola's recipe, Colonel Sanders' recipe, all those types of things are trade secrets. Your list of customers, one of the biggest trade secrets. You wouldn't want that falling into your competitor's hands. So everybody's got some intellectual property. Trade secrets are the easiest to create, the easiest to protect. And from there on, it starts to get a little bit more complex, but they all have very unique types of value. You've got copyright, which is the protection of any type of information in a fixed, tangible form, even the information on your computer screen. You've got trademarks, which is typically your brand names and slogans. If you've got a unique product, you may want to give it a unique name and make sure nobody can copy it. And that's where trademark protection comes in. And, of course, patents, I think a lot of people are familiar with in concept.
Mm-hmm.
Again, very valuable. It could create a revenue stream by licensing it, sometimes even to your competitors. Let them make money for you. It's such
mm-hmm.
a wonderful business model. IBM did that at one point in the 90s. They realized they were sitting on an enormous patent portfolio. And they're still very, very prolific in their research and development and protecting that asset through patenting, and they generated a tremendous amount of cash. And the beauty of it is it was done with very little overhead, just contracts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Infringement of patents, et cetera. This is an area that is, there is a wonderful movie put out called A Flash of Genius. It's fairly new, about an item that had been patented. In fact, it was the intermittent windshield wiper. It was developed by a gentleman working for a major auto company, and it was stolen from him, and it took him 12 years, and he finally won his case because he had the proof and the evidence of same. But all these things can happen. They really can happen. And your book, The Business Guide to Legal Literacy, empowers people to understand when they go into an attorney that they can talk with intelligence about their concerns. And also, if you are in business, if you're going to be a supplier, let's say to some company over in China, or maybe you're going to be doing business where you need something from India or from South Africa, all of this, you need to have a representation. And your comment about having legal counsel in that environment, I think, is invaluable. And typically, you should be able to make contact. What would you say to someone who's listening today that is thinking of starting up a business? They know it's going to have an international environment. They would need to find someone that maybe was involved with manufacturing. Let's just use that image. How would they go about finding a reputable attorney? How do they determine what is going to be right for their situation, and then dealing also maybe with the economics of going overseas and working in foreign environments? What do they need to think of when they're doing this? How should they plan it out?
Well, finding somebody that you can trust and that you have a good rapport and good chemistry with as far as counsel, I think is of utmost importance, because they're going to really be part of your management team, not necessarily in a day-to-day decision-making mode, but you want to be able to bounce ideas off them. You want them to be part of the sounding board. And the sooner you can get them involved in your thought process so that they understand what your goals are and can help you fine-tune your project so that you can achieve those goals, the better off you're going to be. Because if you have to do a course correction later on, it could be a lot more costly and also take away valuable time, which when you're in a startup mode, you know, you want to get going. You're trying to get your cash flow going, and time in some ways can be your enemy. The course correction, I kind of compare that to leaving San Francisco and trying to sail to Hawaii. If you're a few degrees off course, you're not going to make it to Hawaii. So if you've got a specific objective in mind and a clear focus, you want to be able to get as much advice as possible about making sure, you know, where the pitfalls could be so that you can avoid those trap doors and control your risk exposure going forward.
Now, trying to find someone that's overseas in another country, what would be the mechanism to find that, as you stated, local counsel in an overseas environment or any place outside of the United States?
There are a couple of ways to go. First of all, if you have an existing relationship with a U.S. law firm, it might be large enough that it has overseas offices. That might be, you know, the first choice if you're already having a relationship established with a particular firm. If they don't, it's possible they know of someone that they can refer you to. The American Bar Association certainly can direct you to law firms that have very substantial international practices and offices overseas. And there are other types of directories and networks through which international law firms belong, looking for clients exactly with the type of projects in mind that you're describing, Donna.
Well, that's wonderful. Hannah, your book, The Business Guide to Legal Literacy, I think is absolutely wonderful.
Thank you.
It's something that I think is written in a way that a layperson like myself can understand. It gives a lot of food for thought and makes one aware that you may be very excited about an idea, but you had better sit down and really look at taking an attitude of proactive knowingness to the best of your capacity and seeking out people, really shopping around for those people that are going to have the ethics and standards that you want on your playing team, so that you're going to be able to have the representation you need and you're going to be able to stand true to what it is that you want to do. It is so important. So very important. Hannah, what is the website people can go to find out more about your book and other information?
Well, actually, Donna, I've got a blog that I use to continue the discussion that I started in the book, and that's at www.legalliteracy.com.
Okay. That's a blog, legalliteracy.com.
Absolutely. And one thing that I'd really like to mention that I think will maybe of interest to your listeners is that one of the nice things about taking the extra little bit of time up front to get things lined up properly is that once you start rolling, you'll be unstoppable. You won't hit a pothole that's really going to maybe jeopardize your business. Like this one engineer that I knew, he was working on a quality control problem in manufacturing setting, and he had a short deadline in order to fix this particular situation, and he was trying to get some instrumentation developed, and so he decided to contract with two vendors to have them work on simultaneous tracks and, you know, do the brainstorming and come up to see who gets the best project. Well, about two-thirds of the way through, he discovered there were some patents, and that what one of those vendors was working on would have infringed one of those patents. And so he had to stop short.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden he's like, well, you know, at first we thought it was just a technical problem. And afterwards he said, now I realize it was a technical problem, but with a big legal component to it.
Right.
So,
and it made a big difference.
Yeah, there's a big difference, you know. Mm-hmm. So he lost a little bit of time, and unfortunately one of these vendors, you know, went down the wrong rabbit hole, which was unfortunate. But that's the beauty of, you know, a little bit of planning up front can go such a long way. You don't have to look over your shoulder because you've already covered those contingencies.
The Business Guide to Legal Literacy, Hannah Haskelsner, and go to her blog, legalliteracy.com, if you're wanting to explore it further. Hannah, thank you so much for being my guest. This has been wonderfully interesting, and I wish you the best with this publication.
Thank you so much. My pleasure, Donna.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. When we come back, more good things to share. We'll be right back in just a moment.
Enter the magical world of God's Kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown-red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and welcome. You can call in now if you'd like. Telephone lines are open, 888-815-9756. That's toll-free worldwide, including the U.S. Again, 888-815-9756, or you can call in to 530-876-9916. That's 530-876-9916. Now, if you're a first-time caller, all you need to do is give me your first name or initial, and then I'm delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight and give you perceptions that I have. I'm an informational resource, and I'm delighted to share my skills on air. And then also, you can ask a question about anything that you like. So give me a buzz if you'd like to chat during this next half hour, 888-815-9756 or 530-876-9916. By the way, I want to say that the class that we did on Saturday was just a wonderful success, and I've had some interest in perhaps giving it in another location in Western Washington, but if you or you have a group wherever you might be that might be interested in a wonderful all-day seminar that's interactive, we did experiments and tests with proving to people that didn't think they could have any kind of psychic ability whatsoever, and it blew them away what they were able to do. And I just love it, absolutely love it. So if ever you have a group or you'd like to have an interesting class that people would be directly involved with where they could see how their own psychic ability works, then just give me a call, because have group, Donna will be absolutely traveling to wherever you are. So my office number is 800-872-8852. But anyway, I also wanted to address an email that I had received where someone was asking if I would do a reading via email. They're a listener to the show, and I want to be sure that everyone knows that I'm happy to do things on the air, but anything that is done off the air, any questions to be asked, etc., there is a fee for my time, and if you want more information, you can go to my website, DelphiInternational.com, or you can just give me a call and find out all the details, and that's 800-872-8852. Well, if the sun is coming out where you are and spring is absolutely just brightening up your yard and all of your environment, like here in the Pacific Northwest, the sun is shining. It's absolutely incredible. It's just gorgeous outside. What's the first thing that you notice? Well, if you're like me, the first thing you notice when the sun shines is, oh, my gracious, my windows are filthy. And then also, if your car's been sitting out in the driveway, you go, oh, yuck. See, that's the advantage of gray skies. when it's gray and drizzly, you really don't pay too much attention to whether your car is shiny or not. Well, if you have an automobile, you just need to be aware maintenance on it is very important. And, of course, it's always a good idea to wash your vehicle often, because if you're like us, again, I'm in the Pacific Northwest, we have sap. We have all kinds of things like these wonderfully acidic pine needles and various substances that come from these huge trees that we have around us where we're living. And it brings a chemistry into contact with your paint that often can create damage. Now, the key is when you're keeping your car in good shape, you want to make sure that you use a soap that is not likely to strip your wax that you may have on your paint job. Strip it off. And also, you want to remember you want to work with sections. If you have a little car, you really don't care. But when you suds it up, that's great. If you've got a little car, it rinses off pretty quickly. You don't have to worry about it. But if you got a big clunker like I have, then you want to wash it in sections so that you make sure you get all that soap off. You don't let soap stay on and dry, and you always wash in the shade. And one of the things that's really good for your windshield wipers is to use a window cleaner to keep your wipers clean, and you should replace the wipers, I thought, only once a year, but I found out, depending on where you live, you maybe should replace the wipers twice a year, just because weather does affect the rubber and their effectiveness. And, of course, waxing that car up, getting a good job done on it. And there are places like Goodwill, and there's a number of other businesses where they will detail your car. And, boy, does that save you a lot of time, effort, and energy. And it's a good thing to do because it really does keep the exterior in good condition. And rubbing out scratches, now you've got all kinds of things that you can use yourself on scratches on your vehicle, and it'll match your paint. It's really amazing, the various items that they've got to help your car look like $1 million. So you want to make sure that you clean things out, you vacuum regularly. If you're like me and you've got dogs, I don't have kids anymore, but I have dogs, and boy, can that bring the dirt in. So it's good maybe to have something over the back seat. If that's where your puppy friends or kitty friends travel with you, then if you have something on the back seat, you can then go and shake it out. But it's just very important to take care of those vehicles, because you know you may want to resell that vehicle at some time. And right now, buying used cars is really good. I know that there's a lot of fabulous sales on new cars, but lots of times people are looking at their pocketbooks and saying, you know, I really don't want to go out and spend a whole bunch of money on a brand new car. So take care of the one you've got, and when it comes time to sell it, if it's squeaky clean and sparkling, you might find that you're going to be able to get rid of that car really quickly so you can buy the next one you want to get. Let's go to our first caller for the day. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Hi, Donna. This is Cindy. I'm in Florida. Thank you for taking my call today.
Hi, dear. I needed your first name again.
Cindy?
Cindy, okay. Where are you in Florida, Cindy?
In Central Florida, Lake County.
Lake County. Well, welcome to the show, and I'm sure the sun's shining where you are.
Yes, it is. It's gorgeous.
Well, I want to say with you, you're going to be taking care of business. You are going to stay pretty focused, and it's really going to take a lot of discipline because I see so many things pulling at you. Now, what's interesting is the imagery I'm getting in my head. It's like two fingers, the thumb and the forefinger on a hand, grabbing like a piece of your shirt. You know how, maybe using tweezers. Can you get that image in your head? And so Someone with tweezers is pulling at your shirt, and there's one pair of tweezers, there's another pair of tweezers, and you're going, ooh. Now, it's not real serious, but it's irritating, and it can be distracting. And all you need to do is say, it's okay, and it's like taking the shirt and just pulling it down so it disconnects from the tweezers. So what that's telling me is that you're going to have to be very firm, not rude, but very firm with any irritation that come up, or people saying, I want some of your time. I want this. I want that. I want the other. And you need to be very firm and say, call me in 3 months. I'm not available right now, so that you can keep your focus where you want it to be. Now, I am in my hands. My hands are actually feeling pain right now. And I feel as if something has wrapped around my hands, like almost like a leather burn, and I'm hurting. And there is a discomfort in my knuckles, and it's also going up into my wrists, up into my elbow. I think you need to learn how to work smarter with certain aspects of your life. I don't know if you're doing home repair work or if you are dealing with lifting someone quite a bit, but you're not doing something properly. And consequently, your hands are suffering. Your hands, your wrists, and then the discomfort going all the way up into my elbows. Now, it's not going into my shoulders, but it's going into my elbows. So you need to be more alert as to how you do things. Now, Cindy, I have to take a break there. Will you stay with me, and then I'll come back and get your question?
Certainly. Thank you, Donna.
You're very welcome, Cindy. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be coming back and talking with Cindy, and I'll be glad to talk with you, too. Give me a call at 888-815-9756, which is toll-free. Also, 530-876-9916. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen,
tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. We're going to be going back to Cindy. And again, if you would like to call in, 888-815-9756 and 530-876-9916. Hi, Cindy. What's your question for me today?
Hi, Donna. Could you give me a little, help, insight with the relationship with Larry and the situation with what he just pulled and then Ronnie? I've got somebody calling me that I hadn't talked to, got dated a year ago. Larry was in the hospital with a heart attack, and I talked to you actually while I was at the hospital with him, and he had open heart surgery.
I don't recall, hon. I talked to so many people,
okay.
I don't recall
yeah,
what I say to people
okay.
previously.
But anyway, what is
it you're wanting to ask me? What's your direct question?
I found out Larry's seeing several other women. I think he's on a dating service. And I just broke up with him, and I haven't spoke to him since. And I found that out right after he got out of the hospital, and I caught him. then I found out more since then. Then I was contacted by Ronnie. Can you tell me if that'll go anywhere?
I want to ask you a question. Why is it that you don't have enough confidence in yourself to make it okay to leave both of these men behind you? Now, it doesn't mean you have to treat them like dirt, but you don't go backwards. You need to be able to go forward in your life and know that you can attract to yourself the type of partner that you want and get past the caretaking scene. And when I say that, there is apparently a lesson that you have to learn, that you can be caring, but you don't need to be the mother or the matriarch of the males that come into your life. And it seems like you always end up taking that positioning. They don't necessarily want to leave you because they have got a lot going for them, but at the same time, you don't set the standard for yourself that you really, really need, and you're not in the environments where you can meet the type of men that you would really enjoy being around. Neither one of these men would make a good partner, and you already know that. That's why I was asking you to get specific. As far as Larry goes, he's just Larry. He's not a bad guy. But he's not someone that really wants to make a commitment to anyone at this time, and that's perfectly fine for him.
See, that's what's so confusing, because he was asking me to move in with him, wanted to get married, be happy ever after, and then I find out he's really behind my back dating a whole bunch of other women on some dating thing and lying to me.
All right, Cindy, again, you didn't hear what I said, hon. You're attracting the men that want to have a mother, a housekeeper, a maid. They don't really want a partner, per se. The reason he wanted you to move in with him, he was using, well, we'll get married after a while. But what he really wanted was someone to be his caretaker. And you keep attracting this type of person. You want someone that you're going to be able to stand side by side with. And this is a repeating patterning. So you need to be able to do your own investigation to find out about certain people and not be so anxious to move in with anybody or to go down that road.
Right. Well, I haven't been anxious to move in with him, and that's why I've held off, because I was wanting to see if he was really ready for a relationship or...
How long had you gone with him?
11 years.
You just found this out after 11 years?
No, it's been on off, because there's been problems along the way.
All right, Cindy.
I'm to move in with him until I...
All right, Cindy, I'm running out of time here, hon. I want to say something to you. You have followed this patterning with this particular person for 11 years. Ask yourself why you have stayed with that patterning and not moved on. You need to be able to answer that question for yourself. You're a nice person. You don't need to go through this again. He offers you no security. You know his MO. It's your choice. Not his choice, but your choice. I have to go, hon. I'm out of time.
Hey, thank you, Donna.
You're welcome, Cindy.
Blessings.
There's a nice guy out there for you, Cindy. You just have to shift your thinking a little bit, hon. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Now, tomorrow, we are going to have a wonderful young man. His name is Otto, Sebastian Otto, and we're going to be talking about, excuse me, college is now. Yes, we're going to be talking about the college scene and how you can go through it and be able to afford it. So I'm sure you'll want to join me tomorrow. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Wow. Have a fabulous day. It's a good day to be alive, and it's a good day to spread your light. Talk to you tomorrow, same time, same place. Bye for now.